My name is David Cornejo, and I'm the CEO for the hospital. I want to talk to you about today's program, but when we came here a couple of years ago, one of the things we found missing is that there had been a continuum of care in many areas that had gradually dissipated. And it wasn't that the services weren't being provided, they just were no longer being coordinated. So we could take the sleep lab that had moved downtown, we could take the physical therapy that had moved out to two different locations, we could take the behavioral health that had been closed. You can take a number of those items. So we decided that one of our goals had to be to restore that comprehensive approach of care back to this community as a way to revive the hospital. In doing that, we also discovered that simultaneously there was a national push for a new term that was being used everywhere, and that was population health. The difficulty was that there were initially several definitions to what population health represented. And so we tried to synthesize that, or synthesize all of them in a way that made sense. We could say, for example, that if you went to a community of 1,000, and of the 1,000 people, there were 100 people who were alcoholics. And then you took 10 of those people into treatment. You return them to their community, and then you go back a year later and you'd say, so how is your community now, and how is the alcoholism, is the problem better? And they go, no, we still have 100 alcoholics. They came back, they started drinking again, and we're no better off than before you came last year. The definition then of population health is that what you do to improve individuals has to resonate in a community such that the community can say, overall, we are improving. And that improvement can be in the area of diabetes, could be in the area of alcohol and addictions, it could be in the area of maternal child health, it could be in the area of family health, it could be in the area of intestinal disease, certainly could be in the area of precautionary hantavirus disease, making sure you don't get that. So we find it spreading, but then there was another concept that came forth, and everybody came to the same conclusions simultaneously. So the first one says, let's take diabetes. If you're treating somebody with diabetes and you're going to try to improve things in their community, you'd say, well, you know, if you're diabetic, you're going to have heart disease, and you need to connect with the cardiology people. And if you have diabetes, you're likely to have kidney disease, and we ought to be meeting with the renal people. And if you have diabetes, you're likely to have eye disease, because if you have blood sugars that are too high, then your vision is going to be affected. And so you see how that spreads to a number of different areas, and we can apply that to any of the other areas I mentioned. And so the same would be true with maternal child health care. You'd say, well, if you are having difficulties in your pregnancy, you may have gestational diabetes, you may have high blood sugars, you may have high blood pressure, you may have a number of other things. And so the concept was to try to connect those dots and improve the health and well-being in the community. So having said that, you say, how do you do all that without it becoming overwhelming? So if someone says, wow, there's so many things to do, how is one or two or five or 10 or 100 people going to touch that? And you'd say, you do it by having a coordinating concept and structure, and then you individualize it so that the maternal child health people take care of theirs, and the pediatricians take care of theirs, and the diabetic, the internists take care of theirs, etc. But you pull together at the top the connection of all of those, and you develop the linkages and say, look, when someone comes in here and they have some type of disease, but you recognize that their problem is being caused by their drinking, you need to get them referred to someone that can help them. If they come in for diabetes, and you have a cardiology program, and you have a telemedicine program for that, then you need to get them connected to that so somebody can look at that and begin a program that'll maintain their heart at a healthy level so that they don't go into further decline and exacerbate peripheral artery disease, etc. So you take, again, you take the total structure, the total concept, you develop a structure to connect all of these places, and then you go after the individual areas. One of those individual areas is going to be presented today, and just to show you how powerful the concept can be, just in our discussions, we were talking about the fact that we are exploring a program where we work with the food pantry, and we begin to grow our own foods and teach people how to cook and prepare healthy foods. And then we said, now isn't that interesting? If you do that, you can help to prevent stroke. So stroke is the effect, and the program we're going to cover is how what we're doing to address that and help people to get the best care they can locally. But we can simultaneously connect that dot and say, well, let's go over here and let's develop this program to work with and coordinate the stroke prevention. So anyway, I'm going to introduce Dr. William Kiefer, our chief operating officer and the person who pushed for all of this stroke. And I, in fact, when we first started, though, I did ask him, I said, how did you come upon this? He said, well, I think there's people that need it. He says, in fact, when I talk to you, sometimes I think, did he just stroke out? So it was a driving force, but let me introduce Dr. William Kiefer.
Thank you, Dad. This is a great day for us, and we want to thank our partners that are here with us from the University of New Mexico, who have, from the Access Program, and for all their hard work and dedication in helping our team create a new service for the city of Gallup, as well as the entire region, the northwest region of New Mexico, because we will be the only facility in this region that has access to neurological care via telemedicine for many, many miles, up to 100 miles. And so we're excited about that. So we appreciate our partners being here, and for those of you from the media who are here to drive this message out to the community, to let them know that you can receive specialized care for stroke here, and not only stroke, but all neurological conditions here at our Rehoboth McKinley Christian Healthcare Services with our partnership with the University of New Mexico and the Access Program. So thank you. I will say just a couple of things. As David alluded to, we are committed as an administration to moving forward the services that we offer to our community. And this is, as I mentioned, a very exciting day for us as we're launching our Access Program here. And it doesn't matter if you're having stroke-like symptoms or if you know that you're having a stroke, you should come to Rehoboth McKinley Christian Healthcare Services, because we have the specialists that can come in and assess the patient as if they were in the room with them, along with our emergency room physician and our qualified and competent registered nurses that are going to be at the bedside, helping the specialists deliver the care that they need remotely. And so we're excited about this. This is just one of many different endeavors that we have currently that we're working on. We're actually working on many other endeavors that will increase our services and our scope of care that we can deliver to the community. And we can talk about those later, but today we're all about stroke care and neurological care. So it's important to note that through the Access Program, it's not just stroke, it's any neurological condition. So if anyone is having seizures, or if they're having any weakness or numbness, they can come into the emergency room and we would bring up the specialists the same way. Even if it doesn't matter if it's strictly neurologic, it can be neurosurgical care too. And so we will, Access will give us access to a neurologist as well as to a neurosurgeon should it be necessary for the ongoing care and treatment of the patient. And so those are important points to note. Also, what we're getting through this affiliation with the University of New Mexico is access to their protocols, which are evidence-based and they're driven by the most recent literature that is available. So it doesn't matter if a patient is receiving care from Rehoboth McKinley with our affiliation with the University of New Mexico, or if you're going to Baylor or Mayo, you're getting the same evidence-based care and treatment here at Rehoboth McKinley Christian Healthcare Services that you would anywhere, because we're using the most current data and the most current studies out there to deliver the best care that we can to our community. So our community can rest assured that you're getting the very best care that you can because of the partnership that we have with the University of New Mexico and the hard work that our team here at Rehoboth McKinley Christian Healthcare Services has done to create the framework and the structure for our patients to receive this care. So we're excited about that. One of the things that is noteworthy is that we have recently completed the online portion, and when I say we, I mean Paula Hartog. She is our stroke coordinator here at Rehoboth McKinley Christian Hospital, and she has done just an outstanding job, and we have to point out her contributions, as well as Michelle DiArmond, who is our emergency room director, and Bill Norton, who is our chief nursing officer, have done an outstanding job of putting together a framework so that when patients come here, they receive timely care for their neurological symptoms. And so one of the things that we're doing to even take it a step further, Paula Hartog recently completed the online application for stroke accreditation for our facility. And so we're excited about this. We expect to have a survey in the next couple of months. We're hoping by year's end so that we can be accredited as a stroke facility, meaning that the stroke care that you receive at Rehoboth McKinley Hospital is the same that you would receive from any other accredited facility throughout the nation. Regardless of the scope of services or their size, you will receive that same standard of care here at Rehoboth McKinley Hospital that you would anywhere else in the country. So we have a commitment to the healthcare of our community and to the citizens who rely on us for competent and the care that they expect. So we're excited about that. That's going to be coming in the next couple of months, and of course we'll let the press know and our community know when we receive that designation and that accreditation. And the final thing that I'll say is that this is in conjunction with the build out of our helipad that sits upon our atop our roof. Currently, our helipad is under construction. We have another affiliation with AMRG, which is a local helipad and also a fixed wing flight service in our area, and they have partnered with us, and we are building out our helipad, bringing it up to code, and it's important for stroke for this purpose. Currently, patients in our area only fly one direction, and that's from Gallup to generally Albuquerque. As we receive our designation and the work that we've done to create access to neurological care, and as we receive our designation as a stroke facility, we fully expect that our helipad the helicopter that will sit atop our roof will fly out into the region and bring stroke patients to Rehoboth McKinley Christian Healthcare Services or Rehoboth McKinley Hospital to receive the care that they cannot receive in the region. So the patients will come here, stop, and get the care that they need and could receive the entire care, meaning emergent services in the emergency room, and then ongoing care in our ICU or our medical surgical ward. So we're extremely excited about that. We feel that we are changing the face of healthcare in the region with stroke and with many of the other programs that we have coming down the pike, but also with the concept of having a helipad sitting atop our roof so that we can fly patients here to Gallup to receive the care that they have only been able to receive at this point in Albuquerque. So we're really excited about that. I'm going to turn it over now to Paula, who will show you how the program works. Thank you yes.
One question about the helipad.
Sure.
That would be shifting from the ground-based pad that you currently have to the roof.
Sure. We actually do not have a pad. It's another company who has a helicopter that's adjacent to our property. It does not sit on our property. And as David and I met with these companies, we felt that AMRG shared a similar philosophy to ours. And so we've partnered with them, and that's how we're renovating our helipad on our roof. Okay? Paula?
Thank you. Well, I have just... Hang on, can you get me? I have just a bit more to talk about the our accreditation, just a few slides, and then we're going to give it over to our partners from Access. So my name is Paula Hartog. I am the stroke coordinator slash telehealth coordinator, and I'm a ER nurse. That's what I love to do. So I am from Gallup, so this is near and dear to my heart, things like this that we can offer to people that are from here. So what is coming soon, as William has said, we are applying right now for an acute stroke ready certification, okay? So the good thing about that is, like he said, we can take those people. We are trained. We are ready to go to get this all done. The nice thing is we are acute stroke ready. That's what we are going to. But we are using the same parameters, as he said, as UNM, who is becoming a comprehensive center, as well as, and so we hope to someday become, so it goes acute stroke ready, primary, comprehensive. So we are following along the lines of being a primary care center, stroke center. Oh, there we go. So that's what's coming. So what is an acute stroke ready facility? It provides timely access to stroke care, but that may not be able to meet all the criteria of primary and comprehensive centers. We're going to do that. We're going to get the primary stuff here as soon as we can, as soon as we get more of those patients. But we don't have neurosurgery. We don't have things like that. So that's why we have this great partnership that we can send out. However, what we're going to do is we're going to provide access to stroke care for patients who don't have access to larger hospitals. Thus, we live in a rural area. We have all this community, right? All this reservation, this huge county that we have. Let's bring those patients here. Let's give them good care. So why become one? Because we're going to keep up with the standards, like William said. We're using national standards. We're using data. We're using all those things here. Stroke certification can facilitate a culture and drive towards excellence, providing staff with an opportunity to build skills and providing the organization with recognition for achievement. So we are learning and we are being taught and we are constantly studying the new stroke models and things like that. So we're up to date with everyone else. About a month ago, I went to LA and I visited Cedars-Sinai, and it was so exciting because it's exactly what we do here. So there's this big, great, big hospital in LA. We're doing it here in Gallup, New Mexico. So excellent things to look forward to. So what are the advantages? We're going to bring more patients here. We can keep the patients here that have to travel far away, not only to Albuquerque, to Colorado, to Phoenix, to things like that. That's expensive to get your family there to care for those people. So let's bring them here. Let's give them that care so we can do that. And then finally, to access telemedicine, a big piece of the puzzle. So how are we going to be able to take all this? Well, we're going to use this nice little computer here, this camera, telemedicine, to get that continuum, to get the neurosurgery, to get the neurologist, to get them online. So I just have a short little clip of kind of what the access is, and then I'm going to give it over to them.
Hello, hi, Dr. Jones. Thanks for answering the call. I've got a patient here, a young lady, about 42-ish. She came in this morning complaining of some left arm.
Buffering is also a neurological condition.
Well, one last thing, and then I'm just going to give it over because I don't know if this is going to happen or not. Just to let you know, my other job is, along with them, is I collect a lot of data for them. So we see patients, kids that have concussions, come and see us. We can take care of you. You know, it's not just stroke. It's seizures. It's we recently had a patient that lost control of some of the different things, and we had a teleneuro consult just for that. We had a patient that had a stroke a month ago that came in, couldn't swallow, couldn't eat, couldn't take his medication. So guess what? We have those services. We have speech. We have physical therapy. We have occupational therapy. So we got to keep him here. We didn't have to send him out. So sorry, I could didn't quite work out.
Paula, could yes. I ask one quick sure. question? Obviously, telemedicine, very important for quick access. Many people are not going to have that access in an emergency, especially a stroke situation where it is urgent to get information and treatment quickly. Is there a telephone number that people can call for immediate assistance. For instance, just to remind them how much aspirin they should be taking, other things that they should be doing right now before medical help comes.
911. Just call 911. We do have a nurse hotline. There's a New Mexico nurse hotline that they could call. But as anyone would tell you, time is brain. So call 911 and get here. We want to get them here as quick as we can because EMS services are trained to do those things as well. We have a partnership with AMRG, which includes not only Gallup MedFly and Eagle Air, also MedStar, who are bringing them in here. So they are trained for those things. They can give them those things. Don't worry about trying to take aspirin and things like that. Call 911, and we're going to take care of you because time is brain, and on top of that is there's a life-saving medication that we can give somebody, a clotbuster called Activase Alteplase TPA, which you only have a 3-hour time frame to do. So don't worry about that. Come in. Come and see us. Just as people are worried about chest pain, you know, it's like, oh, am I having a heart attack? People are sure seem to come here really quickly for that. Not always for, oh, I feel a little weird. It's a little different. I'm a little numb here. They don't, oh, maybe I'll take a nap. Well, we've lost all of that chance to try to help them. So 911 or get here as quickly as we can. We're going to take good care of you. So I have Susie from Access, who is going to speak next, and she's going to give you, this is Susie Selvo-Wint, and she's going to talk a little bit more about the program.
Thank you all. First of all, we just want to thank you for partnering with us. I have to say, being around the state, Rehoboth is one of the most professional and with it hospitals we've seen. So thank you for running a great place and being great partners. The Access program was developed with a pilot study about 8 years ago at the Gallup Hospital doing neuroradiology or teleradiology. We'd had a $300,000 grant with IHS, and at the end of 3 years, we saved $1.5 million in unnecessary transport cost. So that made Dr. Jonas think, wait a minute, we can do it. We proved just in that little study that we could do this on a big level. And what he saw coming from Pittsburgh is we would get patients at UNMH and they would get flown in, and the next day he would have to discharge them because they didn't need to be with us. And so many times they didn't have ways to get home, so Dr. Jonas would buy bus tickets. And so he had a fund where he just bought bus tickets. And so with all of this, he said, there's just got to be a better way. So that is when Access, we wrote the grant originally in December in 2012. We were not funded in that first go-round, but we got funded in 2014. So what the grant is it's seed money to get this program going. This program will not go away after the grant ends. The grant's just helping us. CMS gave us $15 million to bring this program to as many of the rural hospitals in New Mexico that we can get it in. And early results have been quite amazing, and CMS is even saying they're going to send down actuaries because they just can't believe it's doing so well. So out of approximately 850 consults that we had done through August, we saved 436 unnecessary transports at $40,000 a pop. Now you do the math. When CMS saw that, they were like, are you kidding us? Another initial data is showing that the average use in rural hospitals of TPA for strokes is about 2-3% nationwide of being able to administer in the rural and frontier hospitals. Right now,
can you define TPA for us really quick?
That is the clot busting medication that if you get it within 3 to 4 hours, it can break up an ischemic blood clot. So That is where time is of the essence. So since the study, we have administered 40 doses of TPA through the rural hospitals, which is a 19% administer rather than the 2 to 3. So again, CMS is like, are you kidding us? So, and another good thing, as William was saying, is at UNM, we have interventional radiologists, neurosurgeons, who can do this new standard of care, thrombosis, where they can go in through your groin and they can suck out that clot. But it all depends on time. So what we would like to do, the best scenario, TPA, and if they're a candidate for this thrombosis, get them into UNM. We have a 7-hour window. And we have the only 3 in the whole state that can do this, and they're on 24/7 call. So what we know and what we are so excited about with Access is that we're able to keep patients in their local hospitals. We don't want, we're not trying to get more business at UNM unless it's the right business that only our complex neurosurgeons can take care of. We want you to keep your patients, because if you keep your patients, you stay open. Small hospitals are dying by the dozens every year. And so in order, if we can help you keep that patient, keep that family in the community, and get the equal care that somebody living in a city can get, what better can we do to help New Mexico? So with Rehoboth getting their stroke certification, then what we would do on our side is our consults, our neurologists and our neurosurgeons, knowing that Rehoboth now is a stroke place, could send people here instead of trying just to ship them immediately to Albuquerque. That's not the best scenario. If you need us, though, and we're doing telemedicine, you're going to get to us faster. We're going to have that OR room ready, and we're going to have those neurosurgeons ready. So the care is going to be more timely. And we have seen this over and over throughout the program. So we're in 11 hospitals now throughout the state, and we've got 11 more. We're working with contracting. So, and it also, from the feedback we're getting from CMS, is that this grant, they're very seriously looking at getting us a no-cost extension, because we still have approximately $10 million to go to spend on your patients and help you. And we don't want to send it back to Washington. We want to use it here. They don't know what to do with it. We do. We take care of our people. And so we don't, so we're hoping with this no-cost extension that the grant will actually go out to 2018, August 31st. And that looks really good. We're also part of this new CMS initiative to get these healthcare models through and approved by CMS faster. So we're in an advisory group, Access Already, and we already have data for them, which no other project does. And so with this model, what we're also doing is we're applying to AMA to get you CPT codes for teleneuro consultations so that you can get some reimbursement from the MCOs. We've been to Medicaid. We've been working with MCOs and the State Cabinet Secretary for Health so that they will help support this by telling people, we have this program, use it. It's going to help the state. It's going to help local communities. So with the Access program, we're based out of neurosurgery, and we work closely with neurologists. So we have a team of about 15 employees now. and we're here and we provide education. I think that's one of the most significant things you get besides these world-class physicians helping you, is we provide education. We will help you in this role to get stroke certified. We have clinical nurse directors that have been doing this for a long time. Right, Deb?
Yes.
Yes. I can't tell you how long because she swore me not to. But it's an important, it's exciting. What we see this model doing, coming behind it, is all kinds of medical specialties. Critical care is the next one that comes under this. We can do dermatology. We can do pain and addiction. Many of you know emergency rooms get filled up with those types of patients. They need care that we can help get the right person for you. So that it's endless opportunity with this healthcare delivery model that we're doing. And so I want to introduce my program planning manager, and he's the guy. You know, what can I say? He's the guy. He's the one you're going to see a lot.
Before you introduce Vincent,
yes.
One question.
Sure.
Obviously, this is a New Mexico State program, but are there any options, especially when we're dealing with these critical neurological care situations, where there might be outreach across the border to, say, Hutsoy Medical Center in Fort Defiance or SAGE in Ganado?
Absolutely. And that's why CMS has taken such an interest. They see this as being sustainable, replicable, and scalable to any location in the country. So it is definitely, and that's why they put us in PTAC to get this model through so we can use it nationwide. So we are the ones working for CMS to do this, and we're doing it. And I think we should all be very proud. So here's Vincent. He's going to say a few words.
Good morning. My name is Vincent Gatlin, and as Susie said, I am the program planning manager. And basically what that means is I will be the liaison between the access program and the hospital. So any issues, anything that you all need, I will be the one who will be coordinating and working on those things. You know, when I looked at the word Rehoboth and what that means, a place of enlargement and flourishing, I saw that when I first came into your facility a few weeks ago. And my main goal in this is to help you all provide better patient care while improving your bottom line. I think that will be important to your facility. It'll be important to your community. And so that's why I'm here. I'm very excited about it. I'm excited about the partnership. I'm excited about what you all are doing. And I just hope and pray that we can continue in this partnership for a very long time. Last thing that I'll leave you with, one of my favorite people is Henry Ford and some of the things that he did in life. Henry Ford said this. He said, "Coming together is a beginning. Staying together is a process, and working together is success." So we've begun. There's going to be a process as we stay together, because we will stay together. There'll be some ups, there'll be some downs, but my commitment to you, my commitment to the leadership team here, is that if you call upon us, we'll do everything we can to resolve whatever the issue may be. You will see me. We will do quarterly updates. And don't run from me, but we'll do quarterly updates that will benefit us and also benefit you. And then as we do those things, as we work together, you all will have success and we'll have success. So any questions that you may have, just let me know. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're going to have our nurse director, Ms. Deborah, and she's going to lead us from here.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. I'm so glad you're here. Love being part of the team. Team thing is just my thing. When you say team, I'm like there. They say there's no I in team, but there is a me. But every one of us is a me that's part of that team, and I really like that. So when people say, there's no I in team, and they start acting, I'm like, yeah, but there's a me, so just be careful with that part. And so Vincent and Susie have really kind of told you everything about the program, so What I would like to do, along with your team here, is kind of, we're going to set up and do a consult, give you a dry run. And I made a little scenario for them, but I allowed the people who actually do the work in the emergency room to kind of modify it and do the way that it is supposed to be done, because we want to do it as close to what's actually going on in the emergency room as possible. So the little scenario I set up, my little part, is that there's an elderly person, he's going to be a gentleman, who lives with his family in a rural area, and they're outside of town. So already we have a scenario that's set up where there is no easy access for this patient who's having a stroke. And so this is a 68-year-old person, and they got out of bed this morning, and they were doing well. They were fixing breakfast in the morning, in the kitchen. And about 8 o'clock in the morning, the family noticed, witnessed that there was a sudden onset of the patient being unable to lift their right arm, and they were dragging their right leg to walk. So the family called the ambulance at approximately 8:15. It takes EMS approximately 20 minutes to get to the patient. The ambulance arrives at about 8:35, and
hi.
The ambulance arrives about 8:35, and the EMS team, the paramedics, they do their assessment, they do the vital signs, and they do the stroke scale, and they call the hospital to transport the patient, because this is part of the EMS setup. They do a pre-hospital notification and let the hospital know that they have a patient who's positive for the FAST sign, the face, arm, speech, and time. So this is a possible stroke patient that's being transported to the hospital. That patient arrives about 9 a.m. in the morning, and now I will hand it over to the Rehoboth team.
Okay, so just to let you know, this is the cart. Obviously, this is Dr. Yonis. Hi, Dr. Yonis.
Hi,
UNM. Hi, Dr. So this is what we're going to use. So we're picking up from the scenario, and we're going to try to do it so you all can kind of see at the same time. So at this point, we have met this patient in the ER bay. We have called a code stroke. This patient has went to CT. They have been to CT in 10 minutes or less, and he has now come back. He has a line. He has his labs drawn, and at this point, he has an NIH stroke scale of 10. And we have now set up the cart in our trauma bay, and we have called access, and they have called us back, and we will go from there. Hi, Dr. Yonis. My name is Paula, and I'm the nurse here. This is our patient, Bill Norton. He's a 63-year-old male. He came to the ER this morning at 9 o'clock after eating breakfast at 8 o'clock and being unable to lift his arm and having weakness and slurred speech all to the right side. He does have a history of stroke, which was in 2010. He is had diabetic hypertension. He was last known well at 8 o'clock this morning. He has a BGL of 95. His meds that he takes are lisinopril, simvastatin, metformin, and aspirin. He also has no known drug allergies.
Hi there. Mm. How are you, sir?
My throat.
Can you show me two fingers?
What do you say?
Show him your fingers.
Dr. Yonis, Dr. Beamsley, our ER doc, is also here to assist if you need anything.
Excellent. So, the things I need to know are the basic things you've already told me, and you should understand that before I answered this call, I looked at this gentleman's x-ray. So I've already seen his CT scan, which was already done and transferred to us. Is there reverberation of sound at that end?
Yes.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, it has a little bit of an echo.
Okay. If you have a microphone on the other side, you may want to turn it off. Not on the camera, but if there's another one in the room.
Is that better?
So I looked at the film, and the film has shown me that there's no bleeding. There's no hemorrhage. So this gentleman has had an ischemic, some kind of event, he now has weakness on his right side, and he has speech problems. Normally, I would ask him, sir, can you raise your arms up for me? Can you raise both arms at the same time? And in our scenario, we have weakness on the right, and we're able to pull the left arm up. Maybe move the camera over just a little bit so I can see all of you, sir. And so you're holding your left arm up, and I'm asking you to turn your left arm over, palm up to the ceiling, and you're understanding my words. That tells me a lot about your brain being hurt. But we have good strength, but the right brain, the left brain is in trouble. Normally, I'd ask you to do the same with your legs. Bring your heart down, and allow me to the leg. The way we see that the right leg weak, the left leg comes up and is able to hold it up normally. You can do that a little bit, sir. And so, and then I might ask the nurse or whoever's in the room helping me, maybe pull down on the big toe and see the resistance. Can he, as good as he has strength, fight it on the left and weakness on the right. Sir, I normally talk with you a little bit about how you're feeling, and do you have a headache? And
headache.
Can you point where your head hurts? Just all over the place. And obviously, the other thing you have a problem with speaking, and he's having trouble forming words. We call that aphasia. And speech function is normally also in the left brain. And that would go along with weakness of the right hand and right arm. Commonly, we would see weakness of the right face. So just sitting here, I could look at somebody and say, I've got a major hemispheric problem involving face, arm, and leg, involving feet. I assume, and I know that the woman doesn't have, but we would also have the blue eyes looking right and left. And if you can't, if you have a stroke on the left side of the brain and you tend to look at your stroke area, so the eyes tend to deviate, and that's telling us where the stroke is and how big it is. The time frame, we are somewhere around 2 hours, 2.5 hours from the onset of the stroke, so that's an important factor. One of the questions I haven't asked or you haven't offered was, is there any history of blood thinning medication? Is there a history of Coumadin or Enron? And hopefully the nurse, the patient is telling me no. And then the next question is, is there a history of any kind of surgery? Is there any kind of bleeding problem or bleeding ulcers or any bleeding internally or surgery? So if there's no history of bleeding, the CT scan was normal. I have a significant ischemic event involving the left side of the brain. Our very best treatment in the world today is to give a drug called TPA. And it's the same drug we give for patients with a heart attack, because it's a clot-busting drug. And in lysis, it breaks up fresh clot. Our goal is to get blood back into that brain and turn it right now to where it's causing this weakness on the right side. We give it until with the CT scan clear, the contraindications are already ruled out. Vital signs, do I get the vital signs? Is he not hypertensive? We're going to assume his blood pressure is in normal range, is not over 160 systolic. If it had high blood pressure, we would want to bring that blood pressure down a little bit and get it into a more normal range. And then we would say, give the medication. It should be in the emergency room. The nurse ought to be able to get access to it and find a grip of TPA. And if we're starting before 3 hours, or treating up 3 hours, it sounds like we're going to make that threshold. That's the optimal window to get TPA and then to hopefully get a very positive response with the clot, is lysis is breaking up and moving through. And more than once, we've given medication like that, had a patient just like this, and 2 hours, 2.5 hours after then, we give the medication. In just that time frame, as soon as the drug is given, function is returning to the brain. And the key is the time frame that we get the blood back. Within 3 hours, we've got a very good chance of a good recovery. And so the next thing, sir, you want to do is say, I'm feeling better.
You just put it on that chair
for
me.
You can say it. Because we just cleared your client.
What did he say?
You're feeling better?
Are you feeling better?
Do you feel better?
Feeling better.
Much better.
Better.
That's better.
Okay. You're not going to cooperate today. But the legs and arms are moving, and neurology is improving. Mm-hmm. You got blood flow back to the brain in a time frame where the brain didn't die. It was just in a stun mode. It just wasn't working because the blood flow was below a certain threshold. We allow the TPA to work, break up the clot, and allow the blood to come back into the area. And that is vital, and that's what we've learned, is that if you can get the medication on board, the people within 3 hours, ideally within the first hour, the improvement is much more dramatic if we can accomplish that within the first hour, but there's still a very significant benefit out to 2 and 3 hours. There's studies that allow us even out to 4.5 hours, that's pushing our benefit a little bit. The risk we have is hemorrhage. And the hemorrhage rate doesn't appear to be increased significantly, but there's a bleed rate, the brain stroke has happened. And the bleed rate appears to be very stable, around 5-6%, especially if we get the medication really early, and especially if we control that blood pressure and don't let it get out of control. So that's where the tremendous progress has been made in stroke care today. The next step has to do with if it's a big clot and really injuring the patient, really as the examination this patient had. And then, unfortunately, TPA is not as effective as we would like. Big clots that extend about an inch in length in the brain artery. So that's the next evolution in stroke care, is actually bringing the patient someplace where somebody can run a catheter up into the clot and actually pull it off of the brain. And we have a 6-hour window to be able to do that for large clots. And that is sort of the next step in evolution, is that recognizing large vessel occlusion as a patient who may not respond to TPA, but still can, after 6 hours, and magically respond to pulling the clot out. And so we're receiving that period from them, 6, even 7 hours, and getting amazing saves to people who would have had very devastating large strokes by pulling, actually sucking the clot right out of the artery. With the catheters, you can see the clot that they pulled out as a black clot sitting in the artery, where they can pull down the catheter and pull it out of the brain artery. So it's a rapidly evolving field. The key to the whole game is recognition of the patient. The key to this patient was handling observed problems, recognize there's something wrong. Don't just go back to sleep, receive it, then go wait an hour. Call the medics, get the patient in as fast as possible, and then they can make this triage decision. The first part of it was to make sure there's not a hemorrhage, because a lot of people will have a quick onset of weakness. And he got a headache. It's unusual with ischemic stroke. That could have been a hemorrhage. And it was a small bleed or a large bleed in the brain. Then obviously the TPA is obviously the wrong thing to do. Now we're treating hemorrhage. That's a whole different scenario of how we manage it. But the good news is that we can interact with you in your emergency room, with your patient, with very little delay from the onset of the time we're called, and we can be there with you and bring whatever expertise we can to the management of your patient. Are you all mad from story? Is that all right?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. Anybody have questions?
Any questions? Anybody
want to
talk about something?
Well, Dr. Jonas, we really
have a question.
Oh, we do have a question here in the front.
For years, before TPA became available. One of the things that stroke sufferers were advised to do if they were far from medical help is take an aspirin. But of course, that's not a universal solution. And what is your advice if someone is out of contact and it could be some time before they get medical help, such as, say, out on a hike or something?
Well, what I said was the main first question for is it ischemic stroke or hemorrhagic stroke? So obviously, if it's a hypertension bleed in the brain, aspirin is probably not the best choice. Ischemic stroke, it would be a reasonable thing to do. We just don't know that. So if you do the statistics, ischemic stroke is 4 or 5 times more common than hemorrhagic stroke. So you're saying, well, what if I can't get to anywhere, and am I more likely to do better for your heart if I take a few aspirin? You know, it's a toss-up. You gotta, you know, statistically, you'd probably be okay, but every once in a while, you could make it worse. I do like the idea of people taking aspirin every day, getting the lipids checked, get the cholesterol, triglycerides down, optimize all those risk factors that add body bloodstream. So maybe prevention is even more important, hopefully getting into this phase when we're trying to treat a stroke. So optimal medical care, raise the blood pressure, get the lipid in good alignment. Obviously smoking is the work of the devil. So smoking is evil. And then, you know, going to church on Sunday is always a good thing, too.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have any other questions? Any other questions? No? Well, Dr. Yonas, thank you so much for coming in and visiting with us and showing us a mock run on this. We really appreciate all of your time.
Of course.
Thank you.
We're working.
Have a good day.
We are working.
Does anybody else have any other questions as we wrap this up?
So, there was one question, if I can speak to it.
Sure, please.
The question was asked, you know, because we had some sound quality issues, was that going to be a, would that happen often? And I would dare not tell you that there won't be any kind of technical issues because I try not to lie on Thursdays. but, you know, there's a possibility that there may be some technical issues. We did a test run Tuesday, and it worked fine. You know, but, you know, so, but there may be, but we have some procedures in place that if you can't get Dr. Yonas, you know, through this method, we always can use a landline. We always use cell phones, you know, so there are still methods that we can use. But historically, what we found is that the services work very well, especially if you're using Ethernet and not using Wi-Fi. So as Dr. Yonas was on the phone, I mean, on the cart, I was the IT guy was in there with him. So he said it may just be a bad connection. So sometimes, you know, you may have to start over, but we always have processes and protocols in place to make sure that it gets done.
And of course, there's nothing precluding experimentation with things like earbuds, Bluetooth technology, so that you could have something in the ear of the local physician or even the patient.
Well, we've learned also that Bluetooth and using different experiments sometimes cause more issues than they do good. So what we try to do is maintain the integrity of the cart, and that has been very successful for us. So again, if you have those kind of issues as you're presenting, please let us know and we will take care of that for you.
We have done 4 successful neuro consults already today. So from the past through 2 weeks that we've done it, we've had 3-4 already. So exciting stuff where we've been able to keep all 4 of the patients here in the hospital. So as we wrap this up, William, anything else you want to say?
No, I don't think so, except for, I mean, I've seen this work, and the technical difficulties, of course, it happens the day of, but most importantly is when it matters most and there's a patient, a real patient in front of the camera, it's worked without a hitch. And so, and even if there were a bit of a glitch, as was mentioned, we can get the care that the patient needs. And so definitely want to thank everyone, especially UNM coming out, and Susie and all of your staff for being here. We appreciate you, all your help and support, and Dr. Jonas for the, you can see that this is a study and it's ongoing. And so it's great to have our results as part of a national study that could affect healthcare and the way that neurological care is given throughout the United States. So that's an exciting part of this entire venture. I want to just bring up Dr. Beamsley just really quick. Dr. Beamsley is our medical director of our emergency department and has been in the community for years and years. Do you have anything that you want to add?
No, this is very exciting, and it's really a big difference from just picking up the phone and calling and talking to a neurologist or neurosurgeon over the phone. The fact that they can actually see the patient, just like I think any physician, you get so much more information by seeing the patient, how they're doing, rather than just kind of getting somebody else's description of that. And I think it's going to, and the fact that we can get them on the line so quickly and everything, because the process is set up, you're not pulling somebody out of clinic or something else, all of that has sped up patient care.
Excellent. Any final questions that anyone may have? We're happy to answer them. If not, then that concludes our presentation, and we have some wonderful food over that's over here on this table that's ready for everyone, and you can, you know, talk amongst yourselves and get to know one another, but also have some nourishment. So.
And we have some takeaways, great. So please take what you want off the table pertaining to the access program.
So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming out.
Hey, thank you very much.